Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the biggest night of the year, where we celebrate all the best poets of 2023 on Late Night Poets. With Scott Sharp and Pam Bray. Welcome to Late Night Poets Best of 2023 show. My name is Scott Sharp and my amazing co-host is no other than the phenomenal Pam Ray. We are so happy to be here tonight to celebrate the best of late night poets from 2023. We will be celebrating the three finalists from the following five categories: the best use of rhyme within a poem, the best audio reading of a poem, the most outstanding poetic commentary or worldview in a poem, the best use of figurative language in allusion, and the best artistic expression. Finally, from those 15 poems, we will end our night by announcing who the judges have chosen as the best poem of 2023. I'm so excited to get started, but before we get to that, I want to give a shout out to two of our three judges who took the time to seriously and sincerely consider the 42 self-selected poems by 42 of our own amazing writers here at Late Night Poet. One is amongst our own ranks of the judges, but I know her mostly from a writing group outside of Late Night Poets, and this woman is an amazing writer, very skilled critiquer as well, and that is T. Ink, also known as Tink. She decided to forego entering the contest. I did ask her if she would, and instead she volunteered to help judge the contest. She not only is a member of Late Night Poets, but also runs the writing group Naked Poets. So check it out sometime. Great place for some writing feedback and camaraderie. Tell her F. Sharp sent you. And the other judge is a 19-year-old writer who I promise you will someday be published. She is skilled beyond her years, and her voice, especially in her writes about her heritage, is just unmatched. She is a skilled critiquer as well, and I would strongly encourage you to take a little bit of time and go check her out. Give her a read, and when you comment on her poems, please tell her that Sharp was right. She is talented. Her name here on AP is Skerfs, and that's S-K-E-R-S-S. So our last judge did not want their name mentioned, and as disappointing to me as that is, I want you to know that that person without a question is a skilled writer and someone who truly knows poetry, and that person should know I'm very grateful for them to take their time to do this for me. With that, last thing, all of the judges did express that they had an extremely difficult time trying to number each poem and limit each category down to the top three, which is what we will be reading tonight, and then pick a winner for each category. They wanted to express that they enjoyed reading all of the poems and were sorry that everybody's can't be recognized. So with that, I would like to bring Pam in. And what say you, Pam?
Well, hello there, Scott. First of all, I have to say how much I am looking forward to this show, discussing the poetry We've got a great lineup of finalists, and a great big thank you to you for putting this idea together, for, you know, wanting to give an acknowledgement to those great poets out there in LNP. And a great big thank you, of course, to the judges, all three of them, for putting in their time, because honest to goodness, I truly believe time is the most important thing that anybody can give, and they sacrificed a lot of that, and they put a lot of thought into the judging, and I definitely do not envy them having to make such a difficult choice, but I am thankful, and I am definitely looking forward to tonight's show.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I agree with you, Pam. Last thing before we actually get into it, Pam, you and I were not allowed to enter this show ourselves. But I thought it would be nice if you could tell us one, if you were allowed to enter, what one poem might you have entered of yours that some of the late night poets could go check out and give you a comment?
Well, I decided to pick out, and it's not an easy thing for me to do, the triggered release to 15 Minutes of Fame, which I wrote back in September.
Okay, very good. That sounds like a good, I love the title, I know that for sure. So triggered release, did you say of fame?
To 15 Minutes of Fame, yep.
Okay, because I'm going to write myself a note to go check that out myself.
So. All right.
Hey,
and how about you?
I had one in mind, and then just like yesterday, somebody read and commented on a poem, and I thought, oh, you know what, I'm going to switch to that one. The one I'm going to choose is Eyes of Eternity, which I made the first poem in my second book, which I released last summer. So the Eyes of Eternity. And if you get a chance to check it out, I'd appreciate that. That would be really cool. And so speaking of, you said how difficult it is to choose only one. So I'll tell you, it is really difficult to choose just one. And that's kind of the difficult thing we asked everybody to do, is to choose just one of their poems. It's hard to do, like choosing which one of your pets you're going to keep and showing the rest of them the back gate and telling them, get out of here.
That's true.
But, so it's really tough to do. And, you know, sometimes I think we maybe aren't even the best judge of what's our best poems, you know. So, but with that being said, why don't we go ahead and get into it? I'm sure that people want to hear who won the competition. So with that being said, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. The first category of the night is the best use of rhyme within a poem. So we will now read the three finalists in the order that they were submitted to the contest, and then announce which one has won the award. So the order that they are read in is not an indication of who won the award. With that, the first poem to make the final three for rhyme is Spilled Paint by Just Old Me. And so, Pam, if you wanted to post that. And then choose the reader.
Absolutely. I will be happy to do that. All right. Spill Paint by Just Old Me, and I'll go ahead and give this one a read.
Right.
I spilled an open can of paint onto my carpet floor. It quickly spread without constraint and headed for the door. A sea of green on threads of brown was oozing down the stairs. It stained some art in evening gown, my holy underwears. The goop evolved into a shark with rows on rows of teeth that swallowed coats and baby Mark and last year's Christmas wreath. escaping through the entry door, the slimy shark burped green across the driveway's chalk decor, which caused a panic scene. The news was called, the sirens rang, our neighbors hid in fear. They brought a fierce orangutan that squashed the growing sneer. The moral of this piece will scream as loud as cranky kids. When finished painting, don't daydream. Please seal those useful lids. End poem.
Beautiful read, pal. And did you want me to comment on it first, or you want to take a shot at that?
Oh, you can go ahead. However you want to do comments is fine with me.
Okay. I really enjoyed this write. Very playful write, for sure. A fun and engaging rhyme throughout it. And particularly like the first two stanzas. Let me get back to it and stuff. No, I'm sorry. I like the third stanza most, where the goop evolved into a shark with rows on rows of teeth that swallowed Coates and Baby Mark and last year's Christmas wreaths. So just a really cool, playful rhyme and very entertaining read that I'm sure pretty much anybody reading it would get a great smile out of it. So, yeah, I just overall enjoyed it quite a bit. So appreciate the entry into the contest, Just Old Me, and wish you luck in the now that you're in the final three. What do you think, Pam?
Oh, I did absolutely enjoy this one. The metered rhyme was just great. I think it's so relatable, especially to anybody who has had kids or dealt with kids, babysat, whatever, you know. And it's so funny. It cracked me up. I read it a couple days ago, and it cracked me up, and I just had to share with him. I told him how much I thoroughly enjoyed that the vibe of this write brought the song On Top of Spaghetti to my mind. And not that it was like a copy of it, but it had that general humor where you take a simple everyday thing and it gets completely out of control. And he happened to mention to me in his response that my comment reminded him that he actually has a parody called On Top of the White House that he needs to dust off for this year's election shenanigans. So I truly had fun reading this one, and great lines all the way through. But I have to say, I really liked how the neighborhood just went into a panic, and the extreme they went to, like with that second to last stanza, really just brought out that quirky fun for me. So very well done.
Very cool. Awesome comment, Pam. All right, shall we bring up our second of the final three for the rhyming poems? And that one would be The Bane by Lockdown Larks. And while Pam pulls that up, congratulations to Bane for making it into our final three. And we'll get to reading that in just a moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let me check something. Okay, so I will have to read this one. And it is The Bane by Lockdown Larks. During battle, it's hope.
Okay.
I have to read this one.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, though, for asking. I appreciate it. The Bane by Lockdown Larks. During battle at sword swing in mist of time, three witches sing, Thane of Cawdor and then King, shall this be solace that they bring? Instead of Bane upon him is revealed, no kin descendants will he yield. another son to the crown shield, and in this time then his fate is sealed. Cawdor comes by a king's good grace, the prophecies he doth now embrace. His lady's ambitions positions its place, plot to kill a king he must now face. So swiftly onwards to this faithful deed, to drug king's bodyguard was agreed. A sleeping king knifed with all speed, frame, blame, and slain the only need. But what more hath witches to say, all born of women he will slay, until those of a wood come his way, then shall he see his last today. A wrath he executes with his powers, women and children's lives he devours. Across the land of darkest hours, his lady's suicide as sanity sours. Then from a wood comes an army, the spirit of people must be set free, the wrong no longer bending knee. He fights viciously for his destiny. There was one not from woman born, from a dying womb one had been torn. He sees clearly now prophecy sworn, drops a sword, accepting a fate forlorn. Sing not the fruits of greed, nor the fantasy of a lover's flame. The mist of time ensures all bleed. Love living and live loving is the game. End poem.
Very beautiful read, Pam. I assume you want me to comment first?
Go for it.
Okay, very good. I really like the poem. It's got a, first of all, it's just really well written, kind of written, I feel, in a fancy way, kind of reminds me of maybe something back in a Shakespearean time of sorts. Not so much a colloquial feel as, say, the one we just read by Just Old Me. Some of the lines that stood out to me were, during battle as swords swing, in mist of time three witches sing, Thane of Cawdor, and then king, shall this be solace that they bring? And then also a little bit later in the poem, I kind of like this part too. Then from a wood comes an army, the spirit of people must be set free, the wrong no longer bending knee, he fights viciously for his destiny. So just a, you know, it's got a strong storyline to it as well as being well rhymed, you know. So, you know, I really do appreciate that because, you know, it's very hard to write a quality rhymed poem, you know. And I think that's why a lot of people just don't write them and stuff. It's just not easy to write a really good one. So another set of lines there that I kind of liked was, there was one not from woman born, from a dying womb one had been torn. He sees clearly now prophecy sworn, drops sword accepting a fate forlorn. So just really well done. The meter in it is really great, very well written all the way throughout it, and just a great poem. So. What do you think of it, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. You know, there's something about well-placed rhyme that gives a real classic feel, you know, to a poem, because it seems like a lot of the real classics depended on rhyme, and it wasn't done sloppily. You know, I mean, sometimes there are examples of people using, you know, slightly off-metered rhyme, you know, to go towards the humor of a poem or something. But, you know, a lot of times that metered rhyme really makes a difference in the classic feel. Wonderful storyline. I did like the nod to Shakespeare's Macbeth with adding in, you know, the part about, you know, the had to be killed by someone born not of woman. I thought that was wonderful. I learned something new, which is that Cawdor is a village in Scotland, a village and a parish in Scotland. So I am always appreciative when I learn something new from a poem. And what I really like about this storyline altogether is that it speaks on the idea of someone who is consumed by this greed, by this desire to be in power, and they use that power, unfortunately, to destroy others. And so it was one of the darker stanzas in this, which was dark all the way through, but I found this particularly captivating. Arathi executes with his powers women and children's lives he devours. Across the land of darkest hours, his lady's suicide as sanity sours. You know, just really powerful lines and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. Great comment, Pam. So that brings us down to one last finalist to announce for the best rhyming poem of 2023. And that poem is Give Me Frontiers to Walk Upon, Chapter 2 of The Suitcase, by Red Summertime.
All right. And Scott, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. All right. So Give Me Frontiers to Walk Upon, Chapter 2 of The Suitcase. Here we go. Give me frontiers to walk upon, where mountains rise and breezes meet, where wild things roam and echoes dawn and forests hum nature's retreat. So let me roam across the plains, a world that holds me in its awe, where beauty lies under the rain and nature still untamed and raw. Through troubled lands and more hardships, with hope their guide, they push the tide amidst forsaken borders grips to new heavens where dreams abide. Give me frontiers to wander free, to feel the earth beneath my feet, to chase a dream that's meant for me, and find my place where tracks may meet. I seek the great, unknown and vast, so let me wander free and true, a world that holds me all aghast. My soul will find its journey's due. For there is a world beyond our home, a world of wonder, grand, forlorn. So give me frontiers, let me roam, to find the treasures of my own. For the weary ones who travel with a suitcase in hand, may you find the promise of a sweet and grand land. End poem. And if you wanted to comment on that first page, that'd
absolutely.
Be great.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, wonderful read there, Scott. Such an amazing rhyming poem by Red Summertime that as I was listening to you read brought so many thoughts to my mind. First of all, I thought of the word wanderlust. You know, and I thought of the idea that of all the gifts we have, out of all the desires we have, the desire to be free has been one of the strongest ones throughout history. I also like how he speaks on the idea of the earth, you know, walking up or the feet walking upon the earth. And you almost think of, you know, bare feet and, you know, really connecting with the earth and absorbing its energy. I think I spent pretty much all of my childhood, except for when we had to go somewhere fancy, and most of my adulthood or my younger adulthood barefoot. So that part, that idea really resonated with me. And I like how it speaks on the idea of searching for what it is that and we are looking for. And I think it's one of those poems that you can get a broader message from it. But you can also get an individual message of, you know, and think to yourself, what are my hopes? What are my dreams? What do I need to get out there and really search for? So wonderful rhyme, a great message, and very well done.
Yeah, I love your comment there, Pam. And Love the wanderlust idea. For me, this has some, it reminds me of recently I went to Europe, and we were in Florence, and we were in a restaurant, and this young man who was from Egypt was our waiter, and we got to talking to him, and it was really intriguing to listen to him talk about the need to expand his horizons and to travel, and he wanted to be educated in Italy. And, you know, reading this poem gave me kind of that memory of speaking to that young man and stuff. And it was such an engaging conversation, and he was such an engaging young man that it was very enjoyable in the conversation. But getting back to Red's poem itself, you know, realistically, it is really well written, well rhymed. The meter is good and able to be read throughout it very comfortably. So, you know, I enjoyed all of those things, and it really does carry a story of human beings who are kind of like crossing borders, kind of as you suggested, Pam, you know, each of us having those things we want to accomplish and stuff, and crossing those borders. And as Red says, you know, give me frontiers to walk upon, you know, new things to go off and explore and do. So I thought it was a really nice poem all the way through in every facet. So great job, Red, and thank you so much for entering the contest. With that, Pam, I believe we have come to our first announcement of a winner of a category. And so if you could give me a drum roll, please, Pam, we will announce this year's winner. And the winner of the best rhyming poem entered into our 2023 Best of Late Night Poets contest is Give Me Frontiers to Walk Upon, Chapter 2 of The Suitcase by Red Summertime. About you, Pam, but I'm having fun with this, and I'm looking forward to the category still coming. So,
me too. Oh, this is so great, and congratulations to Red Summertime on his winning for the rhyme category. Oh, very cool. And before we move on, I do have someone to bring on, and I'd like to welcome area code 585 to the show. Who are we speaking to, please?
Good evening, y'all. This is Lauren.
Lauren. No, of course, I should have recognized your number. Geez. Welcome.
I call as frequently as I do.
Glad you could join us.
I've power for about 4 hours and just came back on again.
Oh.
Wonderful. Right.
All right. So I'm getting back into the thing, and it'll be great to have you also in on the commentary as well as the reading of some of these poems, Lauren, because you are an amazing reader of poetry, so as well as an amazing writer of it. So with that, here we go. Pam, I got a question for you.
Absolutely.
Do you sympathize with the judges? How do you decide, right?
Oh, my goodness. I know that they had a difficult job for sure. I mean, there was just some amazing poetry and 42 entries. My goodness. So, yep. Yeah.
All right, shall we get into the next category? And that category is the best audio reading of a poem for 2023. And again, we will listen to the three finalists in the order that they were submitted. This is not an indication of which one has won the award. So first up is Ghost, Come Back Again by Richard Weissman.
And of course, we have an audio for that.
Ghost, Come Back Again by Richard Weissman. Stagnant waters of my interior Atlantic are still haunted by echoes of his foghorn loneliness, while broken screams of gulls, young and old, litter Canarsie's midday sky. Through dusty funhouse Coney Island mirrors, I snap Nikons of white mistiness and vainly struggle to recapture your lemon life long since squeezed dry. Click, clack, clack, click of glass encased stock tickers. Still they grieve and magnet you back here to where wall meets broad. Elongating shadows of towers at dusk mar the green space at Battery, while speeding subways rumble underfoot. All call out in unison, Ghost, come back again. End of poem.
Lauren, would you like to comment first on Richard's poem?
Yeah, that was read with almost a kind of quiet reverence. He really was into the poem in terms of living the words almost. Now, I don't know who the ghost is. Maybe I should look. Probably
his
dad.
Father.
Yeah. Well, then it's reverence and it's love. And the way he refers to him is really rather special. Your lemon life long since squeezed dry. The way he refers to streets where wall meets broad. I think my favorite one is the elongating shadows of towers at dusk mar the green space at Battery, speeding subways rumble underfoot, all call out in unison, Ghost, come back again. Or the haunting phrase, excuse any pun, these subways have always fascinated me. And I used to ride them when I was young, and right in the front car, looking out, going at incredible speeds, brings back a lot of memories. This is a beautiful piece, reverential and loving.
Very true. Great comment there, Lauren. And Pam, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think reverence is just a perfect word to describe this poem. So, you know, very cool there, Lauren. I really love the imagery he brings in this and how he allows his voice to carry and share the emotion that is within the poem. And I do like how this speaks on the idea of wanting the past back. You know, it's such a powerful right, amazing imagery of metaphors, the idea of wanting the past back, wanting someone back like how they used to be before they struggled with their health, before they became a different person. And I, too, was really drawn to where it says, I snap Nixons of white mistiness. I like that he brings up that specific camera brand that takes you back to those old days of actual taking real photographs, not just digital. And vainly struggle to recapture your lemon life long since squeezed dry. And I like lemon life as a metaphor because it makes me think two almost opposing thoughts. First of all, it makes me think the bright yellow color of a lemon and the idea that, you know, the cheerfulness, the cheer that the person may have brought into their life. But it also makes me think of the idea of the bitterness of a lemon and how perhaps this person struggled with their own bitterness in life. I also think that the imagery of elongating shadows of towers at dusk, it paints a picture of the surroundings as he's taking this walk. But it also paints a picture of the shadows that hang over us when we lose someone and we deeply grieve. So amazing, right, and very well done.
Great comments, Pam. Yeah, I agree with you on quite a bit of what you just said. I really like Richard's poem here in a lot of different ways. I felt like there's symbolism in several things here. You know, the stagnant waters of my interior Atlantic are still haunted by echoes of his foghorn loneliness. You know, the lines represent, to me anyway, and, you know, it's hard to say whether Richard meant it this way. You know, we all know, you know, it's partly what any individual can take away from a poem. So, and personally for me, you know, the lines kind of represent the standing still feeling of the speaker. You know, that moment of loss, big as the Atlantic, haunted like the sound of a foghorn. And, you know, just a really powerful start to a poem, in my opinion. Also love the lines that Pam was just speaking of. Through dusty funhouse Coney Island mirrors, I snap Nikons of white mistiness and vainly struggle to recapture your lemon life long since squeezed dry. These lines, to me, kind of like tell how everything just isn't right at this moment. Like the images in the carnival's distorted mirrors. You know, like the power of the line here, to me, everything's just out of focus for the speaker and stuff. So just love that stuff. I felt like the elongated shadows of towers and stuff are like the memories that, you know, are shadowing the, you know, the current life and the park, the green space of the park, you know, which could be symbolic of just life and the, you know, the moving on and stuff. So overall, just, you know, just an amazing write. I thought, to me, this poem could have been put into different categories other than just the simple audio reading that Richard wanted it into. So anyways, with that, shall we move on to our second poem that has been chosen as a final three for audio reading? And that poem is, "And You Shall Know Me, For I Am Death," by Intimidus Rex.
All right, and we'll go ahead and play that audio. So,
I am the boatman. And Akron awaits. Run, 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 you Skraelins, just run long into that misty-filled night. I'm having me a bit of fun, Jason Dollymott's causing fright. Two foggy bottoms, unlit streets, towards Spitalfields, me place to roam, where echoes ring in empty feet, our rookeried Whitechapel home. Thank you. a bonny bonnet Polly wore. No doss tonight, thrice drank her fill. She'll walk along these streets no more. Blind gin cup wears in autumn's chill. One tuppenny bit was all it took for a dark buck's row rendezvous. Throttled neck and opens bloody book. She was my first cuckoo ga-choo. Long-legged Liz be a Swedish tart, with ripped throat found in Dutfield's yard. Too close for comfort when I start, be she mine or some other's card. Now Cat was mine, fell an hour past, scarpering out of Bishopsgate. 'Twas in Mitre Square, I worked real fast, gutting that tart, sealing her fate. Me knife's real short, I'm not done yet. Be huntin' again, after dusk. Her kidney was nice, off I et. Catch me when you can, Mr. Lusk. Top of the morn, your news is grim. I had me laughs at those brought in from Poyser, then drew it most prim to Mansfield's Jekyll and Hyde mandarin. And then come that fop, Tumble Tea, looking to purchase some jarred wounds, but got caught in some buggery, which drove him home to his pet grooms. Keep it coming, boys, or I'm knuffling these gothics, opening old wounds, dressed to kill while you be rifling through dirty drawed songs you've crooned. Touch a Welsh rare bit, e'en more so while she be pubbin. Young and pretty, unchaste but fit, copper-haired and ready for stupin. 'Twas in number 13 Miller's Court, I got to work on me last kiln. Blood was spilt with tools I brought, a masterpiece to gentry's chill. Come one, come all, as I usher up a brave new world on which you'll dine. Eat hearty, as from L you'll sup, as London lives in my timeline.
Thanks to Rex for entering this poem into the best audio reading of a poem, so I didn't have to try to read it myself and slaughter it. Although considering the topic of the poem, maybe slaughtering the reading would fit with the topic. Anyways, this was another poem that might have been moved, as it was very well written and rhymed poem as well. So, with that being said, out of the interest of time, because I do want us to be able to get to the end and announce the poem of the year this year, I'm just going to quickly give a comment on this. I liked a number of the stanzas throughout. I'm not going to try to read them. I believe that for the most part, Rex reads them way better than I ever will. So, But, you know, I like the way he ended it with the Latin. You know, you will know me, I am death. And basically, if I cannot bend the will of heaven, I will move hell. And so just in general, a very well-written poem, but also just a classic read by Rex. So with that, Pam, what did you think?
You know what? I found this absolutely brilliant. I'm always amazed by Rex's ability to play with language. Of course, you know, honestly, I just find the subject of Jack the Ripper so fascinating. One of the most for lack of a better word, fascinating mysteries and serial killers that was never truly proven who it was. And Rex brings us back in time, not only with his read when where he threw in the bell, London Bell Tower, but that he his attention to detail and his going with the Cockney dialect and so many of the old Victorian phrases, you know, like, you know, where he, you know, I can't think of one, but I know there was ones that stood out, but really it's all Dolly Mops, chasing Dolly Mops, lower class prostitutes, and the word Skraelins I learned actually means like weaklings. So the first line will be run, run, you weaklings, run. And he brings forth the idea of a person who comes from a lower class but feels in this kind of intense like pride in themselves for their ability to murder, for their ability to take life. And so Rex's ability to really get in to Jack the Ripper's mindset, I thought was absolutely amazing. Just a brilliant dark write. He's brought Jack the Ripper back to life in all his vain and bloody glory. So very well done.
Great comment, Pam. What do you think, Lot?
Well, there's nothing not to be admired in this piece. The voice that he gives his character is dark, sardonic, exactly the way you'd imagine Jack the Ripper. As Pam so thoroughly covered in her little review of this, he has the language down, the Cockney accent. He's well researched. He knows exactly what to introduce and when. I love the language that he used. One company bit was all it took for a dark Bucks Row rendezvous, throttled neck, an open bloody book. He was my first cuckoo ka-choo. He's captured that catch me if you can attitude that Jack had. He played with his notes when he talked about his victims. I thought he did an admirable job.
Yeah, I agree. I have that cuckoo ka-choo as one that I was going to comment on and stuff, but I figured somebody else would probably bring it up, so I didn't. Anyways, very good poem. Quality comments, both Pam and Laurent. Let's get on to our third finalist for the best audio reading of a poem of 2023. And that poem is Photosynthesis by Naomi Sarah.
All right, and we have an audio for that, so here we go.
Photosynthesis by Naomi Sarah. They say plants breathe out oxygen through their leaves, so I lug in the giant palm tree from off the deck. Plop it down outside your room door before climbing into an empty bed. Too big, too cold for another long, lonely night of listening to your loud, ragged breath echoing across the hall. They come in sharps spasmic shudders, wheezing through her cancer-burnt lungs as if summoning death. And I get up and water that huge palm tree again, fling open the curtains, praying it will drink in a flicker of light from the moon. Open the freezer, pop in ice cubes into a glass, pour in vodka, suck it down in one quick gulp, and pour in more. And turn to pick up the phone to dial my daughter, pretending I'm sipping in enough water and sunshine to still be able to breathe.
Great read by Naomi. And Pam, if you don't mind, would you like to be the first to comment on this one?
I would be happy to. Oh my goodness, this is definitely one of those poems that pulls at the heartstring, you know, and that is something poetry should do. It doesn't have to do it all the time. There's plenty of other reasons to write poetry, but sometimes you read something and you just feel so deeply about what is expressed. And this beautifully expresses the sense of loss, the struggle of when you're taking care of somebody and you're taking care of other people, and you easily forget how to take care of yourself. A powerful and heartfelt rite that digs deep into raw exposure of human emotions as one tries to hold it together in a difficult time. And the idea that oftentimes we find ourselves taking better care of houseplants than we do ourselves, I think especially hits hard. And so while this is beautiful all the way through, it's those ending lines that really grab a hold. So amazing right and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. Very good comment there, Pam. Laurent, what do you think?
I think this is a brilliant piece. The photosynthesis has title. I'd be puzzled for a moment. But she very quickly explains what's going on. This poem is special from my perspective because I know that it's personal for her. And she's taken that pain that she lives with, and she's managed in not so many lines to create a perfect metaphor for the life that she's living right now, caring for someone who's dying of cancer. And she begins with the plants breathe out oxygen through their leaves. So she brings in the giant palm tree and puts it outside his door, presumably to get him more oxygen. Now, we all know that is not going to work. It's not going to provide enough oxygen. But it's the very act of desperation of doing it. It makes a certain kind of twisted sense. So you go ahead and you do it. And then she waters the palm tree again, hoping that there will be enough oxygen for him. And in the same breath, hoping that she's taking in enough water and sunshine to still be able to breathe like the plant. She's hoping for a certain kind of photosynthesis. It's sad. It's dramatic, quietly dramatic, and really, really quite brilliant.
Great comment, Laurent. Yeah, this is such a powerful poem, you know. Another one, in my opinion, that was read with just the right inflection and the feeling to make us feel the poem. So the poem itself has amazing word choices throughout and, you know, it definitely draws us in and makes us feel the situation that exists and stuff. I have a couple stanzas here. They say plants breathe out oxygen through their leaves, so I lug in the giant palm tree from off the deck, plop it down outside your room door before climbing into an empty bed. Too big, too cold for another long, lonely night of listening to your loud, ragged breaths echoing across the hall. You know, just very powerful. You could just feel it and stuff. And you know, Naomi's read of it did such a great job of, you know, drawing us into it as well. So I really did love the ending too, as Pam pointed out, very powerful ending, pretending I'm sipping in enough water and sunshine to still be able to breathe. So, you know, just the focus there of breathing throughout the whole poem, you know, whether it be, you know, the plant, the cancer-stricken husband, or in this case, the speaker. So really powerful poem. So with that, we have now come to the end of our three finalists for the best audio reading of a poem of 2023. And so, Pam, if you would do the honors of giving us a drum roll, I will announce who the winner was. And the winner is Ghost, Come Back Again by Richard Weissman. Hard decision. I think there were some really quality poems in this category that didn't get into the final three. So I just, I tell you, a very difficult thing for the judges, I think, to make decisions in this contest. With that, we will now move on to our next category, which is the most outstanding poetic commentary / worldview poem. And again, they will be read in the order they were submitted to the contest. The first poem to make our final three is Truth by Marilise.
All right. We have Truth by Glenn Marilise. And let's see here. Scott, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Truth by Glenn Marilise. They're killing off the journalists, destroying all the proof, lies from all the others, a massacre of truth. The massive corporations, CNN and BBC, promote their own agenda that Israel should be free. Reporters sacked for honesty, reporting Israel's lies. Meanwhile, there's a shot rings out as another baby dies. Can you hear the bombs exploding? Can you smell the stench of death? A mother holds her baby as it takes its final breath. The baby, not a soldier. It never held a gun. They're dropping bombs like raindrops, and they're doing it for fun. They're dropping bombs on hospitals, destroying brick by brick to fight the unseen terrorists, the old, the young, the sick. Israel was a gift to them, Palestinian arms so wide, but every day they steal more land like an ever-growing tide. End poem. Let's see. Laurent, do you want to give us our first comment on this one?
This is very capably written, unfortunately, with a distinct bias. I'm not sure that bias is necessary, especially when the war was not started by Israel. But I'm not going to reveal any of my own biases because the song works so well. Can you hear the bombs exploding? Can you smell the stench of death? Mother holds her baby as it takes its final breath. Wow. very moving, very cutting edge subject.
Yeah.
I just wish it did have a bias.
Yeah, I agree with you, Laurent. It's a very strong stand that this poem's taking, certainly, kind of accusing Israel of being guilty of atrocities, you know, on the Palestinian people and stuff. It definitely, you know,
I mean, who
kind of walks,
who, you know?
Yeah, walks a tightrope. That's for darn sure here. The poem postures that the West and its media sources sort of defend Israel and keep the truth from being heard. You know, again, I'm not going to comment on, you know, the validity of the statements, just the fact that it definitely fits the category, the most outstanding poetic commentary or worldview poems. It definitely is a strong statement. Pam, what did you think?
Well, yes, definitely a strong statement on the horrors of war. And I like that he steps forward and uses his voice to speak on what is important to him. You know, and while we don't necessarily have to agree with every word in a poem, we can admire the voice within the poem and the strength that it has. And one of the parts I really appreciated about this, because it's so true throughout history, all the wars throughout history, innocent people have died, and the saddest of that is when children die. And so, just like Laurent, those stanzas really stood out to me. And especially, can you hear the bombs exploding? Can you smell the stench of death? A mother holds her baby as it takes its final breath. That baby, not a soldier, it never held a gun. Can you imagine that? I mean, you know, and there are places where sadly children are trained to be soldiers, but more often what happens is you have a child who is simply holding a bottle or a rattle or their mother's breast, and, you know, they're surrounded by violence, and that beautiful young life ends far too early, and that is one of the most sickening thoughts of war and greed and violence in this world. So, you know, nicely done there.
Yeah, great comment. Yeah, there's no doubt this is appropriate for being chosen as one of the poems for this category. It's a strong statement, though. There's, for, you know, no doubt in that. With the second poem for the final three for the most outstanding poet or poetic commentary / worldview poem is A Flower Lost in Rose-Colored Air by Laurent Ivan. So,
how wonderful.
You might be able to get Laurent to read his own poem.
I believe so. Absolutely. I'm hoping anyways. So there you go, Laurent. Your poem is up. Go ahead and give it a read for us.
That's very nice. Thank you. Flower lost in the rose-colored air. The delta flickers in jets of light, born of small arms fire. Distant brat, brat, pocket of brat, erupting at irregular intervals. Orange-red fireflies stream outwards, line dancing in twilight's descending gloom. Duffed foliage descends in odd spirals. A salad of greens dressing noms. Distant chorus weaves the dawn's human air. High-pitched voices sing-song nights of blood and sorrow. Traveling dark paths, bordering surrounding fields of laden rice stalks. Midnight war precedes bright day's harvest, as rows of hands and feet march in unison, pulling rites, we fluttered round ancient rhythms, ancestors alive in chanted lyrics. Explosion locks the air. A great gout of pink water and spinning limbs lie disembodied against a sunlit sky, tinged by a red cloud, slowly descending. Unexploded mines lurk like flat rocks, and again, single pressure from bare feet clicks loudly, arming the trigger. Movement is death. Wailing fills the air. A soul stares at eternity. Time freezes. Terror courses like a snake, undulating to fields of human statues. A mother stares at her daughter, desperate love, the twist of a face without hope. Off balance, attempting a leap, slipping from purchase, terminus. Flower lost in rose-colored air. End poem.
Brilliant read, Laurent. Brilliant poem, frankly. You paint such a picture. Your word choices throughout this write are amazing. The imagery just pulls us in, you know, sound, vision. We can see bullets flying, see flowers being beheaded. You know, some of the stuff I really like. The Delta plane flickered with jets of light born of small arms fire. You know, you could just picture it. Just in brap, brap, pocket of brap. Erupting at irregular intervals. You know, you can hear the gunfire happening. Orange, red, fireflies stream outwards. And you can picture that. Line dancing in twilight's descending gloom, chopped foliage descends in odd spirals, a salad of greens dressing Nam's brown earth. Just love the image of flowers spiraling to the ground here. Also love the imagery in this. Explosion rocks the air, a great gout of pink water and spinning limbs flying, disembodied against a sunlit sky tinged by a red cloud slowly descending. And I could go on because there's more, and I do have more listed as far as things I liked about this poem. You know, the getting on to the idea of the category that this fell into, which is the worldview commentary thing, you know, speaking of the horrors of war and you know, oftentimes, you know, landmines being left behind, sometimes for generations after a war, and, you know, still killing innocent survivors left behind from, you know, that are just citizens and stuff, living their lives later, oftentimes children. So a very powerful commentary on the remnants of war. And just very artistically done. Great job, Laurent.
Thank you, my friend.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is another powerful write. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. You really bring us back to the war, to the Vietnam conflict. I really liked your use of the sound language, rap, 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 paqueta, brap. Also, the imagery is just visceral, I really like how you remind us that this is a part of history, but there is always that part of history is the landmines that are buried and active that still lives within the ground, waiting to strike. I like how the mention of in the title in the end line, a flower lost in rose-colored air. It makes you think of the gases released into the air, like I don't know the specific colors, but you know, obviously that, you know, a lot of those poisonous gases have like the pinks or orange colors. But it also makes you think of the idea of people wearing rose-colored glasses, that they no longer see the effects that war still holds for people generations later, or the idea of people who have to walk on eggshells around certain parts of land. And there are some amazing lines all the way through, but one of the parts that really stands out to me is midnight war precedes bright day's harvest as rows of hands and feet march in unison, pulling rice from flooded ground to ancient rhythms of ancestors, alive, enchanted lyrics. And so you show us a very personal and very beautiful moment on these people who have a deep connection to their ancestors and have to live in a world that still has violence buried beneath their land. So absolutely an amazing rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. If I might, I saw a program the other night on Thailand, another country that has the same problem as Vietnam, millions of unexploded mines, and they have dogs that are trained to smell metal in the earth to a depth of 3 feet. They use these dogs to find the mines and explode them.
Interesting. Great poem. Great commentary on real life stuff. So with that, I'm going to introduce the third finalist for the most outstanding poetic commentary / worldview poem. And that poem is War Glory or Taps by Vaka Chuck.
All right. And sorry. I'll go ahead. Actually, if you don't mind giving this a read, Scott, I'd really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Pam. All right, so here we go. War Glory or Taps by Vaka Chuck. I sincerely wish I had less prayers to pray. The rifle and belongings nearby, property of the Army and one Michael G. Junis, farm boy from near Atlantic, Cass County, Iowa. All he ever wanted to do in life was marry Ginny Mae Klepke and raise up children, hogs, and corn. 61st day here, sniper bullet through the helmet, and I pray for him. It is American tradition, especially in the South, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and the Carolinas, where our finest soldiers are born and taught duty, even now in changed times. Men and women choose to interrupt their lives, leave loved ones behind, along with planned for futures to be physically and mentally abused until they become a unit of interchangeable parts, then sent to create mayhem, perform the impossible on someone else's soil, so those who wish to harm us are denied the pleasure. For this sacrifice in their prime years, when they accomplished together more than they could individually, where they became a wall keeping those that hate us away from our homes and neighborhoods, we honor them with our deepest appreciation in poem. And Pam, if you don't mind giving us the first comment.
I would be happy to. This is another rite that touches my heart. I love to see when the men and women who serve their country in the military are honored through poetry. Such a wonderful, heartfelt rite honoring the men and women of the military who defeated our who defend our lives and our freedoms and sometimes, unfortunately, end up making the ultimate sacrifice. Vaka Chuck had responded to me that he served 23 years in the U.S. Air Force. So, of course, once again, I'd like to say thank you to him for his service and thank you to everyone who has served in the military for their service, for defending, you know, our freedoms. And I really like how he takes pride in tradition and culture. You know, it is an American tradition, especially in the South, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and so forth and so on. And then where he says men and women choose to interrupt their lives, leave loved ones behind. So it's about, I like that he brings in the idea of, you know, not everybody dies in war, but there's always that interruption. There's always some sort of sacrifice made. So amazing write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. What did you think, Laura?
Well, I agree with Pam entirely. Those who pick up their guns, those who drop their plows, excuse me, and pick up their guns are to be admired. They're the backbone of this country in many ways. You've got a lot of people who would never think about enlisting in the military, always wanting to leave it for someone else. But to be able to go to war for your country and all the reasons why, your loved ones, your freedom, especially when we're attacked, who, as Pam said, choose to interrupt their lives, leave loved ones behind, are to be admired, as is the way this poem was written. It doesn't try to say too much. It tries to say just what is necessary. I like the personality described Michael G. Junis, farm boy from near Atlantic, Cass County, Iowa. It personalizes things. He gives vague figures names, how he died, and that he's being paid for. So yeah, the sacrifice can never be hailed too loudly or too strongly. They should never be forgotten. This poem does a wonderful job in creating that kind of vision. I find it a little ironic that the states that he lists, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and the Carolinas, are the majority of the states that seceded from the Union. But be that as it may, well done.
Great comment, Laurent. Yeah, I would say that certainly he's aware of the southern states and their traditions and stuff, and I think all of America is truly appreciative of those people who make the sacrifices that we know that our military does. They definitely leave their families for long stretches of time, even those that don't get maimed or killed and stuff make great sacrifices and stuff to maintain the life that we all live. And so, you know, it's a great poem, definitely a great choice, in my opinion, by the judges to include this in the Most Outstanding Poetic Commentary Worldview Poems. Just a great tribute to our soldiers, the men and women who do make the ultimate sacrifices for us. With that, we have now come to the end of our three finalists for the Most Outstanding Poetic Commentary and Worldview Poem of 2023 that were entered into our contest. And so, Pam, if you would give us a drum roll, I will announce the winner. And the winner of Most Outstanding Poetic Commentary and Worldview Poem for 2023 Late Night Poets is A Flower Lost in Rose-Colored Air by Laurent Ivan.
You look marvelous in your gown.
Oh, well, thank you, darling. And I have to say, you look fabulous in your tuxedo. So. And your big congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, well deserved. Definitely some amazing poetry. I thought you had some pretty stiff competition there, too. Some really good
Absolutely.
Poems included in that category. So, I hope our audience is enjoying the show. It certainly is very enjoyable to be a part of the best of 2023 for me personally. And up next, Pam, is one of my favorite categories, the best use of figurative language and or allusion. And with that, I will introduce, again, in the order it was submitted in the contest, is no indication of whether or not it's a winner or not. Here we go. Our first entrant of the final three is Enduring Autumn by Jessica Wheeler.
All right, here we go. And I will go ahead and give this a read. Enduring Autumn by Jessica C. Wheeler. She wakes, fragile as an October morning. Pearls of dew thread the branches, hanging in delicate balance. She stretches in sifted sun rays, seeping through a spider's web at a bedroom window. A year of trials has left her brittle, like fallen leaves crinkling underfoot. She breathes a cleansing sigh, exhaling the weight of past seasons. The dewdrops still clinging to the sturdy maple stems. She rises to stand against the backdrop of a new dawn, resilient as an October morning. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. Let's see here. I guess I'll comment first on this one. I really loved Jessica's use of imagery throughout this poem. She brings alive the fall season in just an amazing way. I love how she personifies autumn, makes us feel all of our senses in her right, too. You know, we see in the lines, pearls of dew thread the branches, hanging in the delicate balance. You know, we can see those, and we feel when she says, she stretches in the sifted sun rays. And then we can hear in a year of trials has left her brittle like fallen leaves crinkling underfoot. Frankly, I just feel like, you know, Jessica's right here is just really beautiful. It's really well done, a well-crafted poem and just an enjoyable read. So I love the title, too, Enduring Autumn. And the last lines as well kind of stick with me here. Resilient as an October morning. So congratulations, Jessica, for making the final three of the best use of figurative language in allusion. And Laurent, what did you think?
Well, the metaphor is a wonderful one, ably used. At first, I thought perhaps she was personifying the tree, but I don't think so. I think it's someone who's just simply woken, fragile as an October morning, and then expertly uses the metaphor to describe what's happening. It could easily be the maple tree, but it isn't, I think. The imagery painted, though, is beautiful. Rows of dew thread the branches, hanging in delicate balance. And I like the fact that he compares her past year, leaving her brittle, like fallen leaves crinkling on the foot. God knows I've felt like that a lot of times. If you can get rid of the weight of the seasons, the past seasons, I think that's half the battle. and the ending works really well. She rises to stand against the backdrop of a new dawn. The zillion is an October morning, in opposition to the beginning, which was fragile as an October morning. Very well done.
Good comments, Laurent. Sam, what did you think of Jessica's poem?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful. I did see a bit of personification and the idea of personification of autumn. Amazing imagery, wonderful metaphor throughout. I really like how she uses the autumn, you know, resting and growth of a tree as a metaphor for someone who is going through difficult times and finding their resilience and finding their inner strength, which can be very difficult to do. Another thing I particularly like about this rite is that she chose to put some words by themselves, like fragile, hanging, and I think that works in a poem because it allows you to reflect on that one single word and what it means to the poem and what it means to the poet. I really like this all the way through, but particularly she breathes a cleansing sigh, exhaling the weight of past seasons. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Great comments, Pam. All right. That brings us to our second finalist for the best use of figurative language and allusion. And that poem is Tectonics by Orin.
All right. And there we go. And Laurent, would you give that a read for us, please?
With pleasure. Tectonics. We are two pieces of the land. Larger than our skins will allow, we cannot escape one another, carried on an ocean of flame. Bones find their due north, eons inching into cataclysm. Flesh remembers it is only the breath of stars. When we meet, all the birds are singing. Desert and flowers tremble and shake the clouds. Where we meet, even the smallest space is crushed into darkness and diamonds. Shapeless with intent, till something yields deep above and below, and the world is new. Taller than the sky, one is a mountain swelling into dawn, and the other melts back into fire and poem.
That's a great read there, Laurent. And Pam, why don't you go ahead and comment for us first, if you'd like.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, absolutely brilliant with its imageries and metaphor. I really love the one-word title and how tectonics, the shifting plates underneath the earth, represents the central shifting of bodies of flesh and spirit. It's got a wonderful, delicate sensuality, a passion to it. I like how it speaks on the heat and pressure that shakes a person, but also the heat and pressure that shapes a relationship. And so many great lines, but ones that stand out to me are bones find their due north, eons inching into cataclysm. Flesh remembers it is only the breath of stars. When we meet, all the birds are singing. Desert and flowers tremble and shake the clouds. What absolutely brilliant, passionate lines and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. Very powerful. Laurent, what do you think?
I think that the bronze and the two greens that she earned should not have been bronze and green. This to me is a wonderful, wonderful poem. The language is extremely evocative. We cannot escape one another. Carried on an ocean of flame. all that are that implies. And the first two lines, we're two pieces of the land larger than our skins will allow. The world around us is so large, it's difficult to encompass in the framework of our own existence. And I love the way she said that. The line that Camus, desert and flowers tremble and shake the clouds is really uniquely spoken. It's very well done. I like the illusion of being crushed into the darkness and diamonds, the pressure that isn't required to shape diamonds. And that same pressure sometimes extends to human beings. Shapeless with intent until something yields deep above and below and the world is new. That implies the acts of creation from above and below. Wonderfully done. Bravo.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, especially, you know, I hadn't even really looked at the awards she had gotten, but I agree with you that this has been under-awarded, in my opinion.
Jesus.
It's a great write. I can see why the judges chose this as one of the best three for use of figurative language and allusion. She just skillfully weaves this extended metaphor throughout of the Earth's plates and comparing that to two people who are loved. So somehow she, Laurent, you said sort of the same stuff down the lines, but I'm going to kind of hit on some of the same things. You know, we are two pieces of the land larger than our skins will allow. We cannot escape one another, just like plates on the planet can't, carried on an ocean of flame. And I feel this paints such a great picture. You know, it's unavoidable. We cannot escape. We are part of each other, like the plates of the earth. Love the line, carried on an ocean of flame. Because, you know, it's so true for the actual planet. And so also really love where we meet, even the smallest space is crushed into darkness and diamonds, shapeless with intent until something yields deep above and below and the world is new. Just like when you have an earthquake, you know, some parts go below and some above and things become new. Taller than the sky, one is a mountain swelling into dawn, and the other melts back into fire. I think it's a great write, personally. Talks about the moment the two plates give way, sliding against each other, one rising up and the other going below, but always a part of each other. So, amazing write. Just really well done, Arendt. And with that, let's move on and introduce the third finalist for the third finalist for Best Use of Figurative Language and Allusion, and that poem belongs to Babbler. And it is called Locals.
All right. Locals by Babbler. Locals don't use umbrellas in Seattle. East Coast rain shoots down elongated spikes to douse you like a sewer rat. Oregon coastal deluges hit you from the side. Again, making the umbrella a useless wind trap, pulling away in jerks, begging for a new life at sea. Seattle rain wafts down feather light most days, gray lingering on cheeks and hair, lifting up fly always, teasing styles toward escape. Somewhere above the dreary blanket into the blue, perhaps to elope with the umbrellas, droplets roll into armadillo balls on wool coats, a prickle of hedgehogs looking to be brushed off. Hoodies are all you need for this kind of rain. Soft and embracing, drinking the mist, portable blankets that feel like a soft couch and smell of books and Earl Grey tea. People in Seattle don't care if their hair gets wet. Inhaling the petrichor and dreaming of evergreens, drizzle comes down to feed the lakes and rivers, replenish aquifers and powder mountains, peppering landscapes with tender kisses that hide the wet corners of their eyes. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, as always, I love the way Babbler writes. She just writes such strong metaphors. I love the East Coast rain being elongated spikes to douse you like a sewer rat, or the Oregon rain hitting you from the side, making an umbrella a useless wind trap. So she creates such great images. You know, you could just picture the things that she's written, which, you know, is what metaphors and similes and everything are all about. So her description of Seattle rain is so filled with imagery. Seattle rain wafts down, feather light most days. You know, I can feel the mist upon me, gray lingering on cheeks and hair. You know, you could picture the light beads in your hair, Pam. By the way, it looks sparkly, Pam, just so you know. Lifting up, fly away, fly always, teasing styles toward escape, somewhere above the dreary blanket in the blue, perhaps to elope with the umbrellas. Just love that image of the fly always teasing styles and the idea of eloping with umbrellas. Just a stellar write with great imagery and metaphors throughout. Laurent, what do you think?
Well, it's off to Babbler. I don't believe she lives in Oregon. She lives in what, South Africa, Australia? Do you know?
No, she lives in Seattle or near Seattle.
Oh, does she? Okay. All right.
Yep.
Well, that makes sense. That does make sense. Because people who live where the weather stinks either move or they're very, very proud of their weather. And she's very, very proud of her weather. And I like, she brought a smile to my face with the deluges hitting you from the side. And then I loved the personification of the umbrella. Pulling away in jerks, begging for a new life at sea. I thought it was brilliantly done. I like the way she discussed or mentioned the armadillo balls on wool coats resembling a prickle of hedgehogs, and in extending greeting the hoodies of all things, which are soft and embracing and drinks of mist. That's precisely what they do. The drizzle, as she calls it, a drizzle, almost sounds English, British. But their weather's changing, too. I don't believe it's nearly as wet as it used to be. It's moved halfway around the world into Oregon. And I got to say, I love the way you read this, Pam. An outstanding job of it.
Yeah, very good. Pam, would you mind if we moved on and announced the winner of this to make sure we have enough time to finish the show tonight?
That is absolutely fine with me. And just to let you know, we can go a little over time because we'll go off the air, but we'll continue to record. So you do have that little bit of leeway. You just have to keep in mind that I have an 11:30 show. So
okay, very good.
But yeah, we can definitely go a bit over.
Okay, we still got a whole nother category plus the final poem, so I'm going to try to go ahead and announce right now who the winner of the best use of figurative language and or allusion is for 2023. Drum roll, please. Winning poem is Tectonics by Orrance.
Tectonics.
All right. Congratulations to our Rents on a fantastic poem in tectonics. Up against some very stiff competition in that category. The next category also had a bunch of competition. I believe that like 16 or 17 poems ended up in the best artistic expression category. It was stiff competition. With that being said, our first poem to make the final three in the best of artistic expression, again, in the order it was submitted in the contest, is The Ghost of My Mother-in-Law and May Day by Seagoss.
All right, there we go. And Scott, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
I will do. The Ghost of My Mother-in-Law and May Day by Seagoss. She moved into the room next to mine, and I wake at 2 a.m. to a mother-in-law who died 15 years ago. She hates flies. I can hear her swatting the walls and talking to her son, my husband, who died 7 years before her. I knock the door and call, ask if she all right and what she doing here. Having been sizzled in South Bristol crematorium, and she gives me a math test, asks me the answer to 8 times 9. And before I reply, her teeth rattle razor blades, and she tells me I failed. Failed her son, failed my daughter, failing the grandkids. And she swats her side of the door. I go to the kitchen, make tea and toast, harangue myself for not opening the door and blowing the silly dream and annoying dead relative out the window. After all, she is only dust, and nothing is real since COVID. But I don't. I listen to the pounding rain streaming down the windows. Mother-in-law was good at math and weeping, but grief doesn't suit me. Now May bluebells are here, and the nights are scented lilac. End poem. Pam, you want to go ahead and give us a comment on this one?
Oh, absolutely. I am such a big fan of Seagoss. This is a powerful and emotive write that brought so many thoughts to my mind. Like, I don't know about men, but like if how they feel when compared to their father-in-laws, if they feel like they fall short. But oftentimes for us women, we get compared to our mother-in-laws and we feel like we fall short. And, you know, Seagoss speaks on that. She speaks on the ghosts of the past. And she also shows that, and I'm just, I really appreciate this, is how she speaks in her poem on the idea that we all grieve in our own way. And so there's amazing lines all the way through, but I did particularly like the imagery of, and before I reply, her teeth rattle razor blades, and she tells me I failed her son, failed my daughter, failing the grandkids, and she swats her side of the door. Oh my goodness, such emotive lines and very well done.
Yeah, I love that, swatting the door. You can hear it happening and stuff. What do you think, Laura?
Well, this carries initially the flavor of the supernatural with it. But when you see a title like The Ghost of My Mother-in-Law in May Day, you know, it's apt to be a little tongue-in-cheek. And I guess it is. But it's deep. It's very emotional. You're talking about a husband who died 7 years before her, and she died 15 years ago. That's 22 years. But she's still having these dreams, if this is a dream, which makes it kind of brutal emotionally. the examples of what the mother-in-law says, I thought were just the perfect frosting, if you will, to this dream cake that's been created. Lines like, and before I reply, her teeth rattle razor blades. What a wonderful image, you know, cutting language, language that's harsh and cuts at you. And she proceeds to tell her exactly how she feels, the son, and daughter, et cetera, et cetera. The silly dream that she refers to, it might be considered as silly, but again, to have that kind of a dream, I think, reveals something of your position in life at any given time. When she listens to the pounding rain streaming down the windows, I enjoy that too, because rain can kind of change the scene, if you will. It's a nice way in movies, for instance, to change from one thing to another. Then, of course, the rain is done, and the sun shines again. That's exactly what happens. Now May and bluebells are here. The nights are scented lilac. Wonderfully done. Again, I emphasize this poem has a depth to it, and it's really quite special.
Yeah, I really like this poem. It's a great poem. You know, to me, it almost sounds like maybe the mother-in-law was Oriental. I feel that the lines were intentionally written the way they were, very carefully, and so kind of gives me a feeling of somebody whose English is a little broken. And I do love the things like Laurent was saying of the things she says about asking me to answer her 8 times 9 and stuff. And, you know, it's just, it's great stuff. And the whole poem truly is, just love the swath, the other side of the door, like she's angry and trying to swat her through the door. And so, yeah, I could go on a little bit more, but for time constraints and all that, I'm going to go ahead and move on. But that's an amazing write. Class. With that, I am going to announce the second poem for Best Artistic Expression for 2023, and that is English by Jeremy Effie.
All right. Here we go. English by Jeremy Effie. And it goes like this. The corral of gals slandering at the back didn't find my sly style particularly slick, yawn palming a retainer into a pant pocket. Then I rolled cold stoic when the teacher asked for any symbolic implications of a wintry season's forest. The leafless series of trees moistened on licks of daily frost, bearing bark all the more black. When risen above a snowy floor, if nature needs to backdrop lonely, to set a stage for death's despair, the solution cycles itself each year, wearing the calendar call of December. A sign-up sheet for the upcoming honors class slid beyond my desk, unimpeded over a float of frigid air. End poem.
Okay, just a quick comment for me. I like Jeremy's sly humor here, as well as the intelligence of the write throughout it. In the first stanza, the yawn palming a retainer into a pocket is a great line. The corral of gals slandering at the back didn't find my sly style particularly slick. Yawn palming a retainer into a pant pocket. So it's great imagery here as well. Then I rolled cold stoic when the teacher asked for any symbolic implications of a wintry season's forest. The leafless series of trees moistened on licks of daily frost, bearing bark all the more black when risen above a snowy floor. And just great imagery and, you know, the writing of it. And then just the humor of the situation that he's talking about. So the cold isolation of a winter of regrets and missed opportunities standing leafless in the classroom. You know, I really like the write by Jeremy here. Plenty of personality and artistic expression, no doubt. I see why it was picked as one of the final three for artistic expression. What do you think, Laurent?
I agree with everything that you said. I love his word choices, the corral of gals slandering at the back. I, too, like the retainer. I love the phrase that I rolled cold stoic. When the teacher asked for any symbolic implications of a winter season's forest, love the way he describes the trees bearing bark all the more black than risen above a snowy floor. And then the lines concerning nature needing a backdrop lonely to set a stage for death's despair, the solution cycles itself each year wearing the calendar called December. Now, this is a poem that I think could only have been written about and maybe in English.
And Pam, what did you think?
Oh my goodness. Such a wonderful, intelligent write with a biting sense of humor. I enjoy and appreciate the imagery and the metaphors and how he captures the awkward moments of youth where we'd much rather impress the opposite sex than accept our individuality. And so amazing write and very well done.
Very good. Great comments, both of you guys. The last poem that is our final round here is for number three, for the final three for best artistic expression is All Things Change, A 10-Year-Old Experiments with Vision by Miriam Kilmer.
All right, that is up. And Laurent, would you please give that a read?
Certainly. All Things Change, A 10-Year-Old Experiments with Vision. Slowly I close one eye and open it, closing the other, over and over. Each time the scene before me jumps, the pattern changes with each blink. I move my head just slightly, all around. The skyline slopes the other way. Lean to the left, the sidewalk hurtles towards my shoulder. Clouds rise to the right. Ouch, a rose bush towers overhead. Suddenly, ants are huge. Lean right, traffic lights are misaligned. Stand, lean back, a maple hides the sun. In class, I memorize my teacher's angular Hispanic face. She turns her elegant profile towards me. Then I discover cheekbones. Now they are part of every face I draw. Somewhere, her voice hovers like a buzzing fly, but my eyes have taken over. Outside her classroom window, rust, amber, lime, cobalt, like shards of glass, always tumbling, sparkle, rearranging a kaleidoscope, a shifting one, exploding on my sight. End poem.
Great read, Laura. Pam, what did you think of Miriam's write here?
Beautiful and brilliant imagery. I love that she brings us back to childhood and the idea of how throughout childhood there's this sense of curiosity to experiment when it comes to life. And I like how the opening and closing of the eyes represents our changing perspective throughout life as we grow. And those details from childhood that really stick with us. I really like the imagery of lean to the left, the sidewalk hurdles towards my shoulder, clouds rise to the right, crouch, a rose bush towers overhead. Suddenly ants are huge. You know, oftentimes when we take those stumbles in life, it truly changes our perspective. So amazing write and very well done.
Great comments, Sam. I tell you, when I think of a poem, what Miriam's done here hits so many of the things that attract my attention. She reels me in with great imagery and compelling word and phrase choices. And this poem isn't necessarily filled with metaphors and similes, but in my humble opinion, this is very poetic in its rhythm, in its imagery, in its diction. Just a great write here by Miriam, in my opinion. This is a great poem. What did you think, Mark?
You found something that was extremely relatable and constant in language. That was extremely entertaining and kind of eye-opening, because I hadn't thought about this since I was a child. And yet I think we all did it, experiment with our eyes, tilt our heads, see how things that are very, very small all of a sudden become huge. And really, that's a little bit of a drama. Crouch, a rosebush towers overhead. Suddenly ants are huge. And then she brings it into the teacher's angular face and the cheekbones, and how they affected her. And then just marvelously done. I know we're short on time. I'll end it there.
Good comment, though. Yeah. Great writes by everybody in this category. It was a humongous category. So if you didn't get chosen, trust me, it didn't have anything to do with, you know, your write. It's just, it was packed full of talented writers in this category. With that being said, let's announce the winner of Best Artistic Expression. Drum roll, please. And the winner of Best Artistic Expression in a Poem entered into our 2023 Best of Late Night Poets Contest is Ghost of My Mother-in-Law and May Day by Seagla.
Yeah, good poem.
Finished the preliminary rounds, and we are ready to announce the Best Late Night Poets Poem of 2023. And before we do that, just real quick, we're going to say our goodbyes, because upon our announcement of it, we will play the music and celebrate the winner with the music on the way out. So, Laurent, any last comments you'd like to add?
I'm so glad that I got the power back so I could participate. The judges must have had an awful time deciding on something.
I definitely felt bad putting him on the spot, honestly. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. Such an amazing show. Thank you, Laurent, for joining us. Great show, Scott. Thank you for all the work you did. Thank you to the judges, to everyone who participated in the contest. Thank you to Eric and Miriam and Robbie and Naomi and Rozzy for hanging on the board. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for all that she does. All in all, an amazing show, and I really have enjoyed myself tonight.
Wonderful comment. Late Night Poets is an integral part of my life. I appreciate and respect all of you. You are an amazing group of poets, and I feel privileged to be a part of Late Night Poets. And so, frankly, I just want to tell you that every one of you is an award winner in my mind, and thank you so much for participating in my contest. And with that, let's get ready to announce who the finalists are for the Best Poem of 2023, according to our judges. And with that, I have a surprise. there was a tie that made it so there was no way to have three poems. There are four poems that are finalists, and then I will announce the winner of it. So the first finalist, not in any particular order, was Tectonics by Orinth. That is our first finalist poem. Our second finalist poem is The Ghost of My Mother-in-Law and May Day by Sea Glass. Our third poem that qualified was Ghost Come Back Again by Richard Weissman. And finally, the fourth and final qualifier for Late Night's Poem of the Year was All Things Change, A 10-Year-Old Experiments with Vision by Miriam Kilmer. And with that, if Pam, you would give us one last drum roll, I will announce who the winner of Late Night Poet's Best Poem of 2023 was. And the winner is Ghost of My Mother-in-Law and May Day by Sea Glass. Yes, and our next question. Thanks for joining us. Everyone, thank you so much for being a part. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the biggest night of the year, where we celebrate all the best poets of 2023 on Late Night Poets. The Scott Show, Cam Brand.